The content here is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice.
Please consult a healthcare professional with any medical questions and concerns.
If you are experiencing an emergency or need immediate help, call 911.
In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a therapeutic relationship.
I just get so angry. It's hard to sit still.
I don't want to be this way.
My brain just feels all scrambled.
Welcome to episode 56. I'm Chad Douglas alongside Nikki Shields, and a little bit of, behind the curtain. We record these episodes the night of the last episode's released. Makes sense? So this is episode 56. We're recording the night that 55 was released. And 55, if you remember, was how to de-escalate a child. And dang it, Nikki, I could have used that information this morning. Now, the funny thing there is we recorded the episode. I edit the episode and I listen to it for quality control before we release it, right? But I still needed that information that very day. The irony just was gross.
But it just goes to show you that you can know and hear and like really be aware and still not do the right thing in the right moment. And it can be very, very difficult. And I coach these things all day long, right? This is literally my chosen career. And when it comes down to, doing algebra homework tonight, I was not empathetic at all, I can assure you. I did
you
not.
Were just pathetic when it came to algebra skills.
That's exactly. And it didn't go well. And so, I think parents need to give themselves a break. It's good to know and learn and try new things and really work on keeping your cool. But you're also going to do it wrong sometimes. And that doesn't mean you're failing. It's just an opportunity to learn and grow.
And to my benefit, I was cool and calm for 40 minutes before we escalated. So, I gave the options or gave the time, but some of the tips you gave in the last episode, I was like, as I was listening to it again, I was like, oh yeah, could have handled that a little differently. So live and learn, right? So let's move our focus now to episode 56. And we titled this one, it's kind of one of those keep it simple, stupid things, because we went back and forth with, do we have a funny title or creative? And it's just, does anxiety look different between boys and girls? And before we get started, I'm going to pull out my communication degree here and say that the words gender and sex are often used interchangeably, and they're not the same thing. So gender, there are, I'll say dozens, but there are many different kinds of genders, but sex comes down to either male or female. So we are talking about the biological sex between anxiety and how it might show up differently. Fair?
I think that's fair. Yes.
Okay. So the general first question is, how does it show up differently between boys and girls?
Well, I'm going to flip that question on its head and I'm going to ask, what do you think? Like if you had to predict what you think anxiety looks like in boys versus girls, what do you think?
Is this going to get me canceled if I say something that someone's going to disagree with?
Well, I hope not. I hope that if someone disagrees that, we can have a meaningful conversation about it, work through it. But I'm just curious what your prediction would be, right, wrong, or otherwise.
Okay. So I would say, based on my experience with a boy with anxiety, is it's going to come out in boys a little bit more as aggression or anger. I think it could come out as fidgetiness, which I think that could go to both boys and girls. And in girls, I will say it maybe plays more of an emotional role or just extreme shyness. Mm-hmm. And both could probably come with the physical ailments of like a headache or a tummy ache, not wanting to do the thing.
Yeah. So
did I win?
Yes.
Tell us what we won, Johnny.
Your prize is behind curtain one. No, ultimately that is both right and wrong. Right. So
excellent.
So oftentimes in my practice, I will see, little boys come in and we're having problems with anger management or we're having problems with aggression, irritability, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, my initial instinct is not this kid, has an anger problem. My initial instinct is, I wonder if this kid might have some anxiety, because anxiety can show up as anger, aggression, irritability, and in little kids, that's very, very common. Now, that doesn't mean that if I have a little girl come in who's acting out, who's angry, who's aggressive, that I'm not also going to think that it's anxiety. So the thing is that lots and lots, as we've talked about in so many episodes, so many symptoms can be kind of covering up underlying anxiety. And there isn't a huge difference. I will say I've probably seen more boys on the acting out end of the spectrum and more girls on the sort of inhibited, you know, my tummy hurts, shy mm-hmm. end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But I've also seen the reverse in many, many families. And so
sure.
it is not as clear cut as one would think. There's one anxiety disorder that there's really no difference between the sexes. So males and females have an equal amount of this anxiety disorder. Do you know which one it is?
I had two popped into my head. Okay. One was general anxiety disorder, because I think that blankets everything. But then I'm also going separation anxiety might play to both sexes equally.
Wrong on both accounts.
Wow. All right. I'll see myself out.
No, you can stay, please. Because nobody wants to listen to me prattle on by myself. So social anxiety disorder is seen equally in both okay. males and females. All of okay. the others, we tend to see overall more diagnosis for females, but not necessarily in childhood. And that's where like the statistics on this can get a little bit tricky and hard to follow. So
just to clarify, yeah. you said that anxiety will show up more in females than males, typically?
Women. So this is... Okay, so this is me interpreting studies, okay?
Okay.
And so you know there's a lot of math in those. So bear with me, okay? So grown women are 2 times as likely to be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder than men. So that's just kind
of... Do you think it's because the men are too self-conscious or too prideful to talk about it?
I think that's a piece of it. I think there's a multitude of factors. And I hope we can unpack some of those in this episode, because I think there's a lot of reasons why women are more likely to get a diagnosis. I would argue, having worked with people of all ages throughout my career, that men are just as likely to have anxiety than men, but they are maybe less likely to talk about it, less likely to seek help, less likely yeah. to acknowledge it's a problem. And if you think about like taking it back to what we were saying a little bit ago, you know, if little boys are coming in and they're acting out, they're aggressive, they're crabby, they're irritable. And I'm going, there's probably some anxiety there. You know, men who are showing moodiness, irritability, crabbiness, that kind of thing, there could be some anxiety there too, that they just aren't registering as having, you know, as being rooted in anxiety. Mm-hmm. So it's tricky stuff.
And to complicate things even more, can that also be signs of depression?
Uh-huh. For okay. sure. In fact, in kids, irritability is one of the bigger sort of telltale signs of depression in children. We think of sadness or tears or, you right. know, that kind of thing. But oftentimes, you know, an irritable child is going to be a red flag for me that there could possibly be some underlying depression too.
And when you get into those teenage years, irritability, man, that yep. can run the gamut.
That yep. And they can be irritable just because they're teens, but they can also be irritable because they're anxious, and they can be irritable because they're depressed. Yeah, it could be irritable okay. because they haven't had lunch yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or because they have math homework to do, whatever.
All of the above. All of the above. All right. So what do we do here? How do parents start going, okay, my child might have anxiety and I thought it was anger problems, or we've talked before about ADHD and how my son's first grade teacher was like, he's being very fidgety. So I think he probably has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, when it turned out he had anxiety and ADHD as it turned out, but that wasn't found for a few years. So she was spot on just a little before her time. So what do you do here?
Well, I mean, part of it is just what you said, is that there's all these things that can overlap. And so what a parent should do is recognize that there could potentially be some things going on and start to unpack those. So whether it's seeing a counselor or a doctor or a psychiatrist or someone, a psychologist, and getting kind of a, you know, a breakdown of what's going on symptom wise, and then getting some treatment going, whatever that might be. Because as we've talked about, and you've shared before, that sometimes as you treat one symptom, another one mm-hmm. surfaces, or it kind of, you know, mm-hmm. gets a little bit more active because this other thing has gone down a little bit. And so it's sometimes I think we worry too much about what to call it or what it is, and less about just like, you know, what are we going to do to help this kid, you know, kind of get to the other side of just not feeling good. And so it starts with getting some answers, talking to your professionals and figuring out what's going on. And then if it is anxiety, you know, you're going to take the approach of learning to work with anxiety. If it is depression, you're going to learn to work with that. But I would argue that if anybody has dabbled in anxiety, if they've experienced problematic anxiety, they've also probably experienced some mood symptoms that are unpleasant too. So it's not really a one or the other kind of thing.
Yeah, which just adds to the confusion of mm-hmm. it.
Yep. And I wanted to talk a little bit in this episode about, you know, what you started to say earlier, that like is the reason that women are more likely to get a diagnosis because they're more likely to ask for help or whatever. Are there other factors you think that might contribute to the difference between men and women? I mean, I'm not male, so I don't really know what it's like to experience anxiety or other symptoms as a male. What else might get in the way?
And I, not being a female, can't play that role either. But I think being the male here is it's that pridefulness. Is that the wrong word? But it's years ago, I saw a public service announcement, a PSA, on prostate exams and colorectal cancer. And the tagline of it was, "Don't die from embarrassment." And that just really stuck with me because I think sometimes guys, and a blanket statement here, are embarrassed to bring that up to their doctor, or if they see something that could be perceived as wrong, medically speaking, that it's like, oh, I don't want to bring that up. It'll just go away on its own. And I think the same thing with mental health. And I'm very thankful that stigma is getting broken and more people are talking about it. Celebrities are coming out with mental health struggles and sharing their stories, which A, I think helps them. It's a little therapeutic for them. And then B, it's making it more normal and people. And what comes to mind is singer Shawn Mendes, who was in the middle of a tour a couple of years ago and canceled a couple of shows. Then he tried it again and eventually just canceled the entire tour because his anxiety was getting the best of him. Mm-hmm. And I applaud him for saying that. Or Simone Biles, the gymnast who did the same thing in the Olympics, bowed out because of mental health problems. And I know she took some ribbing for that. I just think that's horribly unfortunate because it's like, good for you for speaking up about it and taking care of yourself. So I think that's helping too, is just people are talking about it and realizing it's so common. Mm-hmm. Some of it's a lesser degree and some are just, you know, way off the charts with that anxiety.
And I would love to see the results. I mean, the studies about anxiety 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years from now. I'm so upset because I won't be alive forever. And I realize that it's a bigger existential crisis than we can possibly unpack in one episode. But I want to
or
see
a lifetime
where,
apparently.
Yeah, perhaps. But I want to see where this lands. Like, I want to see what us talking about it more, you know, more men saying, I need help. I'm willing to, you know, ask for help and sharing their mental health concerns. What does that do to the studies? Because something else I read that was really interesting is that up until age 11, girls and boys are equally likely to develop an anxiety disorder. And I don't know how old that statistic is, but up until 11, they're good to go. And then you think about what happens at 11, right? 11 is when like the hormones kick in and things go bananas. And then by 15, girls are like 5-6 times more likely to have an anxiety diagnosis than boys. So just in that short time span, the opportunity for females to develop or be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder goes through the roof. And I just think there's a lot going on there that may have to do with how kids are raised. It might have to do with hormones and like the biological components that contribute to all of this. But it just blows my mind.
That's what I think. It's got to be a chemical thing there that happens during puberty. I mean, I know we've talked about a lot in the past too, that it could be hereditary. It could be situational. It could be a form of trauma. It could be biological. So there's so many things that can lead to this, but I'm going between 11 and 15. We all know what's happening in both boys and girls at that time. And so that makes me think it's a chemical thing.
Mm-hmm. I've read some things and I can get a little nerdy here. I can geek out on this stuff, but that there's biological functions of heightened anxiety in females, that like in some studies with rats, that they're more likely to be agitated, and that there may be reasons for that, whether it be protecting their young or whatever. I mean, I didn't do the study, haven't read it in a long time, can't even like cite it right now. So don't take this as fact, but I am interested in that idea of like, is there a reason why females, you know, between 11 and 15, you know, their likelihood of anxiety disorders skyrockets? Does it serve a purpose? Does it help? Or is it just the function of how we are in society and how we raise them and the messages that these kids grow up with? I would just love to be able to make sense of all of that.
It would be interesting to look at some studies that look at other cultures around the globe, just to see if it is more of, you know, is it an American thing at that age, or is it across the board with girls age 11 to 15 that spikes? That would be interesting to find out. I'm sure there's probably studies that delve into that. So sure. Going back to the original question that I then kind of like skirt it around when you ask about why men do it. I think it is that. And I will share my story, which I did in a previous episode as well. It was literally almost to the day 1 year ago, and just little things were sending me through the roof. Stupid, stupid things. I was getting so aggravated. And I finally said to my wife, I'm like, I think I need to see somebody. Like, this just isn't me. This isn't right. And so I brought it up to my primary first, and then he referred me on to counseling and some medication and stuff. And I'm feeling better. I laugh because I recently had a visit with my primary for my annual exam. And I told him, I said, I think I'm ready to start getting off the medication. My therapist has been wonderful. He's helped me in a better place. My son's in a better place. There's not as much aggravation there. And so this was like 4 days ago. This is why I'm laughing, because he was like, all right, sure. So he cuts my dosage in half and says, if you're not noticing any different, you can just kind of stair step it off, give it like a month. 3 days in, I'm back to my normal dose.
Why?
Because I could tell it was, you know, and I even told my family and I told my coworkers, I said, if you're seeing me get aggravated or agitated over stupid stuff, feel free to tell me, because I might not see it. But darn it, I saw it, because I just, little stuff was just, oh. And so, yeah, I think I started the half dosage on a Friday. Sunday, I'm like back to full dose, because I'm just like, that's not how I want to live. That's not how I want to parent. Yep. That's not who I want to be. And so I'm thankful I reached out and got the help, and it's just, it is helping. And I am better. I think there's probably, well, not probably, there's room to grow and get a little better. And I'm working on it. So I think just swallowing your, as I take a big swallow, figuratively swallow your pride, or physically, and ask the help. I mean, when you bring it up with your primary, there's, you know, the HIPAA law that they can't discuss anything. So everything in that room is kept in that room. And they're going to want the best for you. If you're not comfortable with that, find a friend or a coworker that just says something. And probably 9 times out of 10, that coworker person's going to have a similar instance, or has sought help before and can share their story. And you can just relate to people. I just bring it up, because you don't want to wait until it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we've learned through this podcast that once you start to share your story, it's kind of a ripple effect. Other people will talk about it. Other people then feel freed up to do that thing that you just did. And so I think it's really important to know that, like, our actions impact other people and motivate and inspire other people. And we may not even realize it. I mean, people have come up and said things to me about, you know, what we've shared on the podcast. I know I shared my story in the very beginning too. And it's been really cool to hear people say that I had that too, but I never really thought about it, or I never talked about it, or, mm-hmm. you know, didn't realize that was a thing. And so it's nice to be able to do that. And regardless, I mean, kind of taking it back to the, you know, anxiety in girls versus boys, regardless of, you know, whether you're male, female, man, woman, whatever, anxiety's out there. We all have it. In fact, you said something early on in this episode that was like, you know, what's a parent to do if they think their child has anxiety? And I wanted to interrupt you and say, they do. They all do. Every one of them does, remember? Because we all do. But if you think you have a problem with anxiety, or you think that it's interfering with your life, being able to say, hey, I should do something about this, regardless of what the studies say or the you know, tendencies from boys to girls, it ultimately, anxiety is a real problem we all have to contend with, but we have the resources to do it gracefully and to get through it and feel better.
And that's, you hit the nail on the head there too, is when it's affecting your daily life. And that's when I noticed, I'm like, the stuff that's bothering me should not be bothering me to this level. So when it's affecting your day-to-day life, it's an issue and you should reach out for help. And I will also go on, and I'm not going to go off on a big tangent here, but we're talking mental health, physical health too. Like, know your body. If you see changes in your body, bring it up. Trust your gut. You know your body better than anyone else. This is also, I'm not going to get off on a tangent, but happened to me recently, and got something taken care of that was very, very early on, because I knew my body and said something to the doctor, and we got it taken care of. So just know your body and trust your gut.
I think the thing to kind of, you know, keep in mind about anxiety diagnosis is, regardless of sex, it's the same interventions for, you know, male or female. So if a little boy comes into my office with anxiety and a little girl comes into my office with anxiety an hour later, I'm going to be using very similar approaches. I'm going to be teaching the parents very similar things, regardless of that, because, you know, at the heart of it, there are just certain things that work. And so it's not dramatically different. But how the anxiety displays or like what you're seeing may, you know, call for a different type of approach. So a child who's acting out and kicking and, you know, losing their temper is going to get a little bit different response and a little bit different, you know, coping skills and different ideas than a child who's not talking to anyone and shy or reporting tummy aches. Those are just different symptomologies. And so you would treat the symptom, not the child's sex. That's, you know, that just to make that point clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause that was going to be one of my questions was treatment. Is it different? And it's not. And it sounds a lot like diagnosing it is just as confusing as the disorder itself.
Oh, for sure.
There is no black and white here. It's a lot of gray area. Mm-hmm.
And individual personalities can tell you, you know, more than anything else, really. I mean, because you can have a really outspoken, you know, child with anxiety. You can have a really soft-spoken child with anxiety, and they might look exactly the same or completely different. And ultimately, the treatment approach, whether it be medication or therapy or some kind of family intervention, it's all going to be based on what that person needs, regardless of, you know, whether they are male or female.
And again, going back to, you know, if it's trauma-induced, then that's mm-hmm. a whole nother avenue to travel down. Mm-hmm. Also, like, what about parent involvement or you know, how things are in the home? Again, going from trauma versus how things are handled. You know, are you in a two-parent home? Are you being raised by your grandparents? Or, you know, are you in foster care? There's just all kinds of different ways to look at this.
Yeah, well, environment plays a big role in what, like, how a symptom is represented, right? So if you have, you know, a parent who is really inhibited and shy and, you know, prone to like quiet internal anxiety, you know, the child may not realize that that's what's going on because the parents aren't talking about it, but they may demonstrate similar behaviors. They may also be quiet, inhibited, shy. If you've got a parent who acts out when they're irritable or anxious or, you know, kind of escalated, then you're going to see.
That would be
me. There we go. Then you're going to see a child who acts out. So kids tend to do what they see in their environment. So whomever they live with, you know, you're likely to see like a miniature version of yourself demonstrating things. And like what we said 1,000 times, you know, their brains aren't fully developed. Ours are. If we're acting out, you know that they're going to do it too. And so they'll pick and choose. They won't have the same traits as you exactly, but they're going to have, you know, an interesting mixture of whatever their adults are demonstrating in front of them. And so, yeah. You know, that may, you know, kind of playing back into the statistics on anxiety in men and women and the higher likelihood of a woman being diagnosed, it could be that it's just been kind of taught over generations of women behaving in a certain way, right? So, yeah. And that can get kind of in the twisty, complicated thinking too. But what they're seeing at home is going to have a huge impact on what symptoms you might see.
Yeah, like the old saying goes, it's hard to parent the you out of your child.
Oh, for sure.
Guilty, huh?
Yeah, I like the ones that say, like, you know, if I'd known I would be arguing with a miniature version of myself about blah, blah, blah.
All right. So I guess our takeaway from this is, yeah, there are differences between boys and girls, but yeah, there's also not.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of overlap.
Yeah.
But women are statistically more likely to be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder at this point.
Yes. And likely maybe because they talk about it more, but we don't really know because we don't do the studies. We just read it and try to interpret and try to keep that conversation going. Right. Our next bout of episodes, we're going to kick off another series. And this one's going to be all about ADHD. We're going to do a 3-part series and we're going to really dive deep into ADHD. So a couple of weeks, we'll be releasing that episode. So stay with us on that. As always, we thank you for sharing these episodes with others and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Also helps us kind of move up the algorithm charts there. Our whole goal in starting this was to start a conversation, and that conversation continues with you.